And answer show Greenwich Matters, where your host Sam Romeo will keep you up to date on the political scene in Greenwich, along with decisions made at the state and federal levels that impact Greenwich. And of course, he'll take your calls at 661-5051. That's 661-5051. And now here is your host, Sam Romeo.
Good evening, Greenwich, and welcome to another segment of the Greenwich Matters show. And as our biweekly program, we bring on Mark Betts and Rob Kennedy to bring on some new initiatives in housing. And this evening, we have some lively guests, or a couple of lively guests, who are going to give us some new and interesting information on housing. So passing housing expert Lou Arena, Dalen Martello, and project manager Stephen Hall is going to join us on the line, or on not in the studio, but...
Right. Well, we've got Stephen Hall in the studio.
Right.
And then Dalen Martello is going to call in a few minutes. So we're going to talk about, we're going to expound a little bit upon the passive house that we were talking about 2 weeks ago, and sort of bring it into the commercial application.
Yeah, because we missed a lot of stuff that show on by so fast.
We did, and we were hoping to get CMG back on here, who did a wonderful job for us a couple of weeks ago, and scheduling didn't quite permit it, but we're going to get them on again soon. But we're very pleased to have Stephen Hall back tonight, who's been on before, and he's going to speak a little bit to some of the work that he's doing with regard to passive house commercial. But we're very excited to have Stephen Winter Associates, and we have calling in Dalen Martello, who is an analyst for the company with regard to sustainability. And he's going to talk a little bit about some of the projects that they've got going on, and what goes into that, and maybe talk a little bit about Lois Arena, who works as the director of Passive House for Stephen Winter, and has been on a number of shows and holds talks regularly and really fills auditoriums with some of her information. So do we have Dalen Martello?
Yeah, we got him. Yes. Go ahead. We got him. Go ahead, Dalen.
Dalen?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Nice to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to be on.
So why don't you start off by giving us a little background about Stephen Winter Associates, and then going into what you do for the company and maybe some of the projects you're working on, and talk about how Passive House fits into all this.
Sure, absolutely. So Stephen Winter Associates, I'm sure as many of you know, has been around for quite some time now and has been kind of a leader in energy efficiency and design consulting for architects and engineers. And within the last few years, we've really grown in our passive house department, thanks a lot in part to my colleague Lois and the work that she kind of was at the forefront of. And now our passive house department is growing, and we are working on a range of projects, mostly in the New York, greater New York City region, some projects up in the Massachusetts region as well. And these projects, I'm happy to say, have been ranging anywhere from single-family residential buildings to now very large multi-family commercial office spaces, kind of a whole palette of different building types. And each are kind of presenting their own challenges and potential solutions, and solutions that are getting implemented, and it makes it that much more exciting. Obviously, our kind of keystone project at the moment is Cornell Tech, and that's kind of the one that you'll see a lot in the news. And it's been a very interesting project to work with and be a part of, in terms of both the design of the project and also the construction and the project management aspects of that, and how we really have to kind of take a few steps to stay on top of the project management of the certain passive house aspects of that building and ensuring that what we are specifying in our design is actually getting built on site. So I've been with the firm for almost a year now and have worked exclusively in our passive house department and recently obtained my certified passive house consultant certification. And I'm a part of a range of projects, mostly multifamily, and then a large office space in Boston as well. That's going to be the next biggest passive house project. And, you know, it seems like there's kind of an arms race now with the passive house projects and the next project wanting to be bigger than the last one. So it's just kind of snowballing right now, and we're, you know, right in the middle of it. So it's exciting.
What would you say is fueling this trend?
Sure. So what I would say is there are a significant amount of, I'd say, opportunities for financial incentives offered through programs such as NYSERDA and HPD. And there is certainly kind of a push from outside agencies and the cities themselves to promote passive house projects as a part of their solution to addressing probably one of the greater issues of our time in the greenhouse gas emissions and it aligning with their targets. For example, New York City has a steep goal of 80% carbon reduction 2050. And to get that, there needs to be significant cuts in the energy consumption of these buildings. And the city sees passive house as a model and as a design goal that can actually attain levels that are of that scale to really have an impact. So there's certainly a force behind the cities and agencies out there that are putting incentives out and requests for proposals for these projects. And then having said all of that, there is certainly benefits from an energy cost saving standpoint. And typically the cost premium for passive house buildings that's often cited is anywhere from 5 to 15%. But the energy reductions on an annual basis are anywhere from 70 to 90%. So these buildings end up being very cost effective in many cases, and that's certainly another aspect that's fueling this trend and uptick in passive house projects.
So why don't we back up just a little bit and talk just bring the listeners out there, give them just a little education on what it means to build a passive building
in layman's terms, so right. They can understand it.
Well, yeah, I mean, because we all have this, and of course, there's listeners out there that are involved with green and passive and net zero, and but for the average listener out there, why don't we speak to that point a little bit?
Absolutely. So, passive house as a concept, as an idea, as a certification is strictly focused on the energy performance of a building. So in comparison, if you look at something like a LEED certification, there's credits that you get for implementing things such as sustainable building materials, whereas passive house does not care what you use in terms of the specific materials, but they're looking at the energy benefits of that. So so it's strictly a way to reduce the energy consumption of our buildings.
Okay, so that,
get
that's
the passive house. Sure.
I just want to interject. That's a really important point to us as a distributor of products, because you know, we're trying to accomplish something on behalf of the folks that are designing and building all of these buildings, and it's a contribution in and of itself to have a product that lends itself towards the finished product and the finished goal of reducing energy consumption. And it's often a debate as to how you go about achieving that, like what types of products, and I'll speak to the example of windows, where the passive house community is looking typically for benchmarks, like in terms of U-value, the heat that's lost through a window, the measurement thereof. So in terms of something like that, what you're saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't necessarily matter exactly what the efficiency levels are, but you're looking at what the overall result of the building is.
That's correct. Now, there certainly is something to be said about the efficiencies of the components used, and you're not going to get to the level of energy demand at a building without a certain level of efficiency.
Right. Of course.
You can get there different ways. So you can, you know, either insulate your walls a little bit more or insulate your roof a little bit more as a trade-off.
Right.
To something in terms of a mechanical system. So there's different ways to get there, and there's no one way to do it.
We're going to have Stephen's going to speak to that a little bit.
Hi, Dylan. From a project management point of view, I could probably spend several hours with you going over all the various issues that have come up in these buildings. I did hear Lois give a talk once, and they were considerable.
Yes.
From a just going back to the average listener in Greenwich, and why they would be interested in a passive structure, be it commercial or residential. I mean, basically, the concept is we are going to create one hell of a tight insulated envelope, and it's going to be airtight. So we're going to insulate the foundations. We're going to take care of thermal breaks, which transmit the cold or the heat from the inside to the outside through material. So we want to break that so it doesn't happen. We're going to have a high degree of insulation in the walls. We're going to pick our windows so that they are very efficient. And we're going to insulate the ceiling. So we basically are creating a vacuum bottle. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
But along with that, though, you got to make sure you have proper airflow.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. So from a passive house perspective, there's obviously a keen focus on the energy use of the building and ensuring that there's an airtight envelope so there's no air leakage through your walls and your roof. Now, the next question naturally is how do we ensure that we get proper ventilation to ensure that the indoor air quality of these buildings are sufficient? And essential to that picture is balanced heat recovery ventilation systems. And it's a concept that has been used before passive houses, but it matches extremely well with the passive house philosophy.
But similar, and, is that, would that be similar to what they do in a submarine?
You know,
I mean, you had an airtight environment, and you have to have that airflow constantly being cleaned and ventilated. So
that's interesting.
I would assume it'd have to be some sort of technology along those lines.
I'm not entirely sure.
The submarine, if I may interject, Steve here again.
Sure, absolutely.
Unless they put their snorkel up, they ain't going to get any fresh air.
Right.
Okay, so they got to recycle what they got, and they got to add to it and purify it. Being an ex-Navy guy, used to chase those submarines.
I know. I couldn't be on it because I have to sleep with an open window.
Yeah, so you have a high degree, I'm sure Dylan will concur, you have a high degree of filtration. You precisely calculate how much air exchange you need. You need to harvest the air from various points inside the building, which in the residential is usually done with a mini duct system. And then the air as it goes out with heat transfers that heat to the cold air coming back in, vice versa in the summer.
So going back to my question about using the windows as an example, how would you go about determining what types of thermal values and levels of efficiency you would like to achieve for a building?
Sure. So we take a step back at the initial design, the initial phase of design for a project. What we do is, at a very high level, get our building into an energy model so we can get a feel for how heat will flow in and out of this building in terms of the actual quantitative numbers behind that. And then what we do is we tweak our efficiencies of our walls, our windows, our roof, our energy recovery systems, our mechanical systems, and we find the optimal point that will bring a project into Passive House certification. It will meet the thresholds that are set by the Passive House institutions. And once we figure out what those efficiencies are roughly are, and we kind of design with some headroom in under these thresholds so we can allow for potential during the construction phase for something that we just couldn't envision at such a high level. So we get out in front of a project early on, see what it takes efficiency-wise, and then we look at the actual values in terms of R values and the U values of the windows, and even look at the different components of the windows. So the U value of the frame is, with Passive House, where you typically need triple glazing, the U value of the frame is going to be worse than your U value of your insulated glass unit. So so kind of fine-tuning those numbers to an optimal level is what we really do at a high level at the start. And then as we are engaged further with the clients and the architects and the project team, we see if that's feasible in terms of what products are available. And then if we need to tweak those numbers to have a more design friendly solution set for the project
okay,
itself.
Okay. And so we have Pat Aida here tonight, and he is representing, he's the head of commercial at Interstate Windows out in Pennsylvania. He's one of our flagship manufacturers, and they've been producing a window for years that is, in terms of thermal efficiencies, tends to always be ahead of the curve. Give us an idea, and then I'll let you talk to Pat a little bit in terms of the different lines that they have. They work with a tilt-turn system that generates about a 0.12 U value and a very low, like an 0.04 air infiltration, or maybe even less. And then they've been working with your traditional double hung and casement windows that they can bring down to a 1.3, 1.4 as well. With these types of values, talk a little bit about the values that you look for in your buildings. And, of course, you've never used our products. You're new to the show, but talk to us in general about, are these sufficient enough for these Passive House standards?
Sure. So the values thrown out, 0.12, 0.13 for U values of the windows, are certainly suitable from a Passive House number standpoint. The question then becomes the calculation of that number. And the Passive House Institute has a certain, they have a ENISO standard that is the standard that they use for the calculation of the U values of these windows. And there's instances where a U value calculation can come in and it might be calculated in a different method than what is required by this standard. So once we understand what values, if we can get a 0.12 window, that's obviously great. The next question is, was it calculated to the level that the Institute requires? And that's then the value that we use in our models. So that's certainly a doable number from a Passive House perspective. And the interesting thing with some of these larger commercial projects and multifamily high-rise projects is there's actually less of an emphasis on the overall R value of the building, because the building itself has a more optimal area-to-volume ratio, and these buildings typically, from our experience, require less in terms of R values. So our walls might go from an R40 in a typical passive house to now an R20. And our windows, there's a potential that we can get away with double glazing. Having said that, there's certainly other aspects of passive house from a thermal comfort perspective that we want to ensure. And a value that's over 0.24, 0.25, then the question becomes, well, it's feasible from a energy balance perspective, but there's the potential that these windows might cause some discomfort for the occupants. So we try to consider all of these aspects, and for passive house certification, we absolutely have to consider these aspects. But to address the point of 0.12, 0.13, absolutely.
Well, how do you mean discomfort? What do you mean by that?
Sure. So if we have a window frame that has a poor performing U value, and as a result, there's a significant amount of heat loss out that window frame, the natural convective current around that window will then cause potential for discomfort from just convection and comfort. It's uncomfortable conditions at the window, and surface temperatures are also another factor in that as well. So if we have a low glazing surface temperature, that can also be a part of introducing these convective loops that cause discomfort from occupants.
Pat, you want to add to that?
So Dylan, how are you? It's Pat. What you're referring to is, and that's that convection that you're referring to is why usually heat sources are actually generated under a window or somewhere there actually try to comfort, make that more comfortable. I've even seen some areas where they do a radiant type heating system to kind of create that more of a comfort level. When you're looking at the values or calculations from a passive house, and how it's calculated, how does the passive house calculation, how is it, I guess, judged in a fashion of, compared to the NFRC, which is typically what we see in the States? So I know passive is a lot of European is done in passive. Is that a correct statement?
Yes, that's correct. So the NFRC method is slightly different in terms of kind of your assumptions for what the glazing unit itself is. So there's in the European standard method, there's a certain methodology in terms of what is an assumed glass unit. And based on that assumption, they then can calculate what the U value of a frame is using their standard method. From a requirement standpoint, passive house obviously requires this ISO European standard. We're starting to see manufacturers under the calculation method as there's more of a demand for passive house certified windows. But oftentimes we see the need for us to, request that this calculation is done to this standard or have a third party perform that calculation to that method.
Okay. Are they looking, when they do their calculations, are they doing it by component of the window? So the framing materials, the spacer materials, the glass itself?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. So, they'll look at the U value of the frame, the U value of the glass, and then also the heat loss associated with the spacer along all four sides of the window. And then the final aspect of that, which is actually kind of outside the scope of the window manufacturer themselves, is actually what the installation condition is for that window and how it sits in the wall. And if there's insulation wrapping around the wall, the window frame, they look at the heat loss associated with that.
Well, yeah, no matter what the U value is, if it's not installed properly, it's not going to work.
Correct.
So Dylan, on the passive house, do you take into account solar heat gain into that calculation and air filtration numbers?
So the solar heat gain calculation goes into the passive house energy model. It does not go into the calculation of any U value or anything of that nature. That's focused strictly on heat loss. the energy model for Passive House to attain Passive House certification, obviously, is looking at kind of the energy balance of the building. So it's very focused on the solar gains through that window. So the solar heat gain of that window is absolutely accounted for. And that's another kind of design strategy and design characteristic that we look to tweak for a project to get that at an optimal level.
Right, and that obviously varies depending on what geographical region you are in the country.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So it sounds like the PHI certification is excluding measuring the window as a whole. Is that a fair assumption? They're measuring the components, and they're coming up with each individual value, but they're not actually measuring the whole window, the window as a whole when it's put together?
No, so the way that the calculation method works is, according to these standards, what we get is we get a U value for a frame, a U value for a glazing unit, what they call a psi value, essentially the heat loss associated with the spacer of those windows. And then it goes into a calculation, a formula. You calculate the effective U value of the whole window, and then you take the whole area of that window and account for that in the model. So the effective whole window value is calculated eventually, and that's what's actually used from an energy budget standpoint from the Passive House model.
Dylan, when they look at the glazing unit itself, are they looking at center of that glazing unit, or are they doing that as a whole overall unit?
Center of glass.
Center of glass?
The value they look for. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Dylan, we're running a little bit short on time. Certainly, as I discussed with Lois Arena, we would love to have Stephen Winter, yourself or Lois or anyone from your organization back on very soon and talk about this a little bit more broadly. We always seem to run out of time, and I would like to thank you and Steve Hall from Chandler Associates, Pat Aida from Interstate Window and Door, and Rob Kennedy didn't get to talk tonight, but Greenview Building Products is always does its job in putting this show together. Rob did a wonderful job.
How could we not bring Rob in? I'm going to give extra time to Rob.
Extra time to
let,
Rob.
Let him come in and give his two cents here, Rob. Wouldn't be a show without Rob.
So I first came across Stephen Winter at when I was at the Stanford District 2030, and I was talking to Megan Saunders, and she said great things about them and how they were really helping on energy efficiency in buildings. I want you all to know, too, that if some of your colleagues, architects and other people that are interested in looking at the show or listening to it, we will have it on our archives on greenviewbuildingproducts.com.
Okay, well, we've run out the clock. Actually, we went over the clock. And I want to thank everybody for coming in. It's been a real informative show, and I hope to see you all back here, you know, soon with further information, especially with Stephen.
Yes, absolutely.
All right? So we're looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, 661-5051. You've been listening to Sam Romeo, and we'll be back after these short messages.